This is the United Nations. We present Gene Kelly in Jungle in Retreat. UNESCO and United Nations Radio present the first program in a special series, Jungle in Retreat, featuring Gene Kelly. A transcribed account of a 100-day expedition into Southeast Asia, reconstructed from original diaries, notes, and sound recordings made on the spot by a United Nations investigating team who actually saw the jungle in retreat.
Out cigarettes. Fasten your safety belts, please, for takeoff.
That's a great moon.
Uh-huh.
What a movie shot that'd make, flying up the path to the moon.
Hmm? Oh, yes, yes.
Oh, come on, Richie, get your nose out of that notebook. You're missing the view, isn't he, Eric?
I can fake those pictures. I can get all the moonlight jungle pictures I want in the Bois de Boulogne.
That's the way it began. Eric with his camera, Richie preoccupied with his notebook, and me with my tape recorder. A UN reporting team. An adventure we won't forget in a hurry. 25,000 miles in an even 100 days. Two seats ahead on the plane sat a hillman from northern India. He was wearing a sort of big robe and was holding a staff in his hand, like an ancient prophet from the Bible. His sons were across the aisle with water gourds and bundles of, well, who knows what. I looked at him, and I realized suddenly how little I knew about the East. Then I tried to remember what they told me at the World Health Office back in New Delhi.
You must remember that malaria is one of the more important killers in Southeast Asia.
Important killer in Southeast Asia.
The initials are WHO and UNICEF, the World Health Organization and the International Children's Emergency Fund.
WHO UNICEF.
Southeast Asia, you will get nowhere if you hurry. Tomorrow is always a holiday.
Tomorrow is always a holiday. Well, that sounds sort of friendly.
300 million people are stricken with malaria every year, and 3 million die of it.
3 million die. 300 million get malaria. Say, listen, Richie. What's the general effect of malaria? That is, supposing you don't die of it.
Well, it depends on what kind of malaria you get. You see, there are four different malarial parasites transmitted to humans by the female of the mosquitoes of the genus Anopheles. And the severity of an attack depends on the number of parasites.
All right, Richie, skip the science. Just tell me what happens to me if I get it.
You, or an African who has built up some measure of immunity, or a child in Thailand where we're going now.
Okay, I'll settle for the child in Thailand.
Well, the child will feel very cold when it's hot and sweaty. If it survives, it'll have an enlarged spleen. You can feel it, and you can use the spleen as an index to infection. But malaria is a kind of disease that comes in waves. An area which has long been sick of mild malaria may be visited by a virulent epidemic, and then a large part of the population will die. No work can be done, no harvests are gathered.
But always at harvest time?
At spring sowing and autumn harvest. You can have more than half your workers sick of the fever. The fewer hands to sow and reap, the smaller the harvest, and at the worst, famine.
Well, that's pretty frightening in a general way, but tell me, if I had malaria, how would I feel?
Why not catch malaria, mon ami? Then you can make a beautiful recording of yourself, and I will take a picture of you.
So, with that pleasant thought, I went to sleep, thinking of the strange people I should see and the unfamiliar, exotic sights. And I woke up. And I saw the sun slanting over a laughing horizon of twinkling pagoda spires. we were coming into Bangkok. They told me Bangkok is the Venice of the East. I suppose because a third of the population lives on the water. The houseboats are of light wooden bamboo thatched with palm leaves, and little boats weave in and out selling sweets, cloth, fruit, fish, and hundreds of weird-looking objects piled sky-high on barges. The streets are a scramble of rickshaws and bicycle trishaws and pony carts, ox carts, and all shapes and sizes of automobiles. Buses and trucks and ancient trolley cars get through somehow, and the population skips out of the way with remarkable agility. Old and new, east and west, great palaces and golden temples, and inside the temple courts of deep peace and silence, a thousand images of the Lord Buddha smile calmly across the dim cloisters.
Look at that temple. It's incredible. Where's my camera? The temple of the Emerald Buddha. It is a pure miracle in technicolor. Oh, Richie, you may go to your plague spots. That is where your scientific heart lies. Oh, for me, I wish I could stay here and take pictures for the rest of my life.
Bangkok lost its appeal for me almost at once, for I got a violent attack of dysentery, which gave me a very, very personal interest in the United Nations war against disease. But finally, one Monday morning, we climbed aboard a plane and headed north towards the mountains on the frontier of Burma and Thailand. At the airport, we met the WHO team in the Malaria Control Center at Chiang Mai.
Welcome to Chiang Mai. I am Dr. Sambasivan, the team leader. Mr. Calder?
That's right.
Did you have a good trip?
Yes, indeed. I'm glad to meet you, Dr. Sambasivan.
How do you do?
How are you?
And may I present Dr. Bhatia, our entomologist, and Dr. Udham.
They were really glad to see us, these men of science from many countries. We shook hands and began to get acquainted. Then I took another look at the golden spires of the Buddhist pagodas. The talk didn't match the setting. It was all about malaria control and how to kill the mosquitoes. And here we were in the land of the Buddhists, who believed in the sanctity of all life, including that of the mosquito.
No, there is no problem here now between science and religion. The chief abbot himself has told his people to work with our World Health teams. As for what we have done, you will of course see for yourself.
So we piled into jeeps and headed for the villages. Every bridge was an invitation to a broken neck, and every turn revealed new delights of color. Look at those beautiful black-haired Thai girls. Mm. That's too bad I can't talk their language. And there's another temple. 10, 12 pagoda spires and those leaf bells tinkling in the wind.
Look at that. 6 monks in yellow robes, each with a red umbrella. Oh, Kel, shut. Stop. Hand me my camera.
And then the strangest funeral I've ever seen, as bright and gay as a carnival of flowers in Nice. The mourners, too, were very gay. They were preparing a firework display.
Ah, yes, my friend. Here there must be no sadness, even in death.
We went on to village number 2 on the malaria control team's map. There was a crowd of men and children sitting on the temple steps. Over there, further back in the shadows of the temple itself, shy young priests who watched and listened. Over here, a circle of Thai women and a group of men midwives. And right in the middle, under a glaring red parasol, stood a smiling Irish nurse.
You're going to be responsible for the health of your village, beginning with mothers and their children. The last time I came and spoke to you, you promised you would get the mothers of this village to eat fruit. Now, we'll begin with you, Tang. How many mothers have you spoken to about this?
2, please.
Only 2? Oh, well, never mind. It's a beginning. Do they eat fruit now?
No.
I know why. They're still afraid, because no mother eats fruit. Oh, it's a silly old idea you have, that fruit causes disease. It does not. You know it doesn't. Now then, did you eat fruit, a whole heap of fruit, to show them how silly they are?
No, please.
Oh, why?
I don't like fruit.
Do you like to see children weak because their mothers are unhealthy?
Oh, no, please.
I know you're a very good and a clean nurse, and very good with the children. But you must help me in this.
Please, Nurse Cannon. She asked me to eat food to the mothers, and I did. And many of them are eating it now, so that Nurse Tang did her duty. Yes.
No, she's setting a bad example. Now, Tang, promise me you will eat fruit.
Yes, I will.
Very well. We'll come back to this fruit business in a moment. Now, run along, girls. Now I'm going to show you men something.
Yes, nurse?
First, I put my hands into this dirt.
Why, nurse?
Look at them. Come here now, you two. Are they clean?
Yes, very, very nice.
Rubbish. Don't you dare to be polite. What would happen if I delivered a child with hands like this?
Please?
I'll tell you. The mother might die.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Now then, show me your hands.
There you are.
Oh, they're a disgrace. They're as dirty as mine.
Yes, perhaps.
I'm going to wash mine in this basin. There. Now look.
Very nice.
Not nice. Clean.
Clean.
Now I can attend to a woman and she'll not die. Now then, how many children have you delivered this month?
More than 20.
How many mothers and how many babies have you lost?
One mother. Only one mother.
Only one mother? Are you sure about that? Only one mother?
One mother.
No babies?
Ah, babies.
How many?
Ah, 4 babies. But who am I when the Great One calls his children to heaven?
You're a midwife. It's your fault if you lose this life for them.
No.
It is, it is. Now, will you promise me to wash your hands before and after you attend to anyone? A real promise. Now, come along. Will you promise?
Yes, I will. Before and after, to please you.
That's a darling man.
WHO Chiang Mai, World Health Organization.
Say, doctor, I got a big kick out of watching Nurse Cannon, but tell me, does she have to give that kind of elementary lesson in every village?
Yes, but it is not elementary to the villagers. The nurse is fighting against customs many thousands of years old.
You have a high death rate amongst children, Dr. Sambasivan.
Yes, and from many causes. For instance, when we first came here in 1949, 70 out of 100 children had chronic malaria.
Oh, and now?
And now practically none. You will see for yourself. We have got rid of the malaria, but we haven't got rid of bad feeding habits. Uh-huh. Many of the babies used to die. There is no such thing as infant food or baby's bottles.
Really?
So the parents feed them on the only food available.
And what's that?
Rice, even vegetables and chili peppers, which no infant can digest.
I tell him.
Now we have UNICEF milk and can save the orphans. But we don't know how long the supplies will go on. I would like you to come and watch one of our own doctors, Dr. Udham.
Oh, fine. And what's he doing?
He is checking the health of the children in a temple school not far from here.
The doctor summons the children from the temple school, and they rush out in great delight. The children lie one by one very willingly on the altar table in the temple grounds, and Dr. Udham feels for any sign of an enlarged spleen, the mark of malaria.
Lie there, my child, now. I am pressing. Does it hurt?
No.
Here?
No.
And here?
No.
Is your father well?
Yes.
And your mother?
Yes.
Good. And your brothers and sisters?
Yes, very happy. Bai Chi stole a little sweet cake from me.
Did he? That's naughty. Now, is everyone at home well?
Yes, yes.
No enlarged spleen. No malaria this year. No malaria at home.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
It was hot and stuffy in the control center laboratory, even with the fan on. There, Dr. Samba Sivan showed us our tiny enemy, many times enlarged, through the microscope.
Come here and look, Eric.
Eh? What?
There. Can you see?
Hmm? Oh, yes, yes. Well, it doesn't mean anything to me. Like a lot of bits of grass or sticks in a kaleidoscope.
You're looking at the salivary glands of a mosquito.
Oh, am I? Well, well.
It contains the germ of malaria, which we can recognize at a glance. You are seeing just what we saw in the 13th mosquito.
The 13th? You must explain that, Doctor.
You see, we had first to find the type of mosquito which carries the malarial germ here.
And how did you do it?
We were lucky. We collected a great number of different mosquitoes, and on the very first day, the very first day of our arrival, we found the germs of malaria in the 13th mosquito we examined.
The 13th? That was a bit of luck.
Yes. But then we knew, and we found this mosquito breeds in running water.
Ah.
Then we also found that it rests on pots and pans on the floor, sometimes on bedding, but usually on walls, but never more than 8 feet high on the wall. Then finally we checked. It was susceptible to DDT.
Ah, so you spray the walls and so on with DDT?
Yes. You were to see a spray tomorrow.
Good, I'll look forward to that.
Tell that man to spread his bedding out for spraying.
But why? Why should he spray?
He says you will spoil them.
Of course he will.
Do you want to have malaria?
No, no.
We are killing the mosquitoes which bring the malaria. Don't you understand?
Ah, killing the mosquitoes. Oh, you can spray mine twice.
Yes, we will as a special favor.
You can spray mine if you do it twice. Yes, please.
This area is clear of malaria now. I take it you're still DDT spraying to keep it in check. Is that right, Dr. Rudum?
That is correct.
Uh-huh.
We spray once and sometimes twice during each mosquito's breeding season.
And of course, it's made a tremendous difference to food. They're not sick and they can get the rice harvest in.
Now they can grow two crops instead of one.
And do they?
No.
Oh, why?
That is another problem. The solution to that one is education. But they must learn these things in their own time and in their own way.
I got a taste of the old ways and how they were changing when we got back to Chiang Mai. The place was rocking with excitement. It was the morning of the Katim Festival. The Katim Festival. A happy Siamese girl, her eyes shining with excitement, told us exactly what it meant.
This festival is the end of our Buddhist Lent and the end of the monsoon, a joyful occasion. The priests receive new yellow ropes from the people. Everyone rejoices, as you hear. This year, we also make a special Thanksgiving because we have no more malaria.
A Buddhist festival of Thanksgiving for no more malaria.
Richie, it is absolutely essential that I have the proper facilities for my pictures. A jeep, two jeeps, in a procession, or perhaps an elephant. Look, it is a veritable paradise for a cameraman.
It was indeed a paradise for eyes hungry for color. I have never seen more beautiful women. And as beautiful as they were, their dancing with its languorous rhythm, its restrained, slowly sweeping gestures of arm and foot, its graceful pirouettes and its practiced unison and harmony, their dancing was even more breathtaking. We left Chiang Mai the next morning by train for Bangkok.
Well, how do you think your pictures will turn out, Eric?
Hmm? Oh, magnifique. The most magnifique pictures I've ever taken. If
what?
If the camera kept its mind on its work. And you, Richie, I see you filled four notebooks. With what?
I'm still trying to sort out what we've seen. You get drunk on color and you begin to lose sight of the anti-malaria project.
Say, Richie, tell me, am I right in thinking that the WHO teams are largely responsible for wiping out malaria?
Well, up to a point. WHO provides the people, doctors, nurses, technical people. And UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Emergency Fund, UNICEF provides the supplies and equipment. And the governments provide the local members. Now, that's important because they've got to carry on when the international team moves out.
Oh, I see. Well, am I right then in thinking that these WHO UNICEF teams have got malaria in Thailand under control now?
No, not all Thailand. They will eventually when they've trained the teams. It's the Thais who are then responsible. Dr. Sambasivan estimates that in 5 years, this malaria will no longer be a public health problem.
Richie.
Yeah?
Do you think it will be as beautiful in India or in Pakistan?
We'll see when we get there. They're doing some interesting experiments.
Interesting you scientists are all the same. You have no soul. I take pictures of the most beautiful girls I have ever seen. But does that please you? Oh, no, 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 no. You have only eyes for the 13th mosquito.
We left Bangkok for our next malaria assignment in Dhaka, East Pakistan. Again, we flew in the inevitable Dakota, the camel of the air, over the delta of the Ganges. We could see how the shifting branches of the sacred river, heavy with the topsoil of India, had divided and subdivided, creating ephemeral islands and overflowing and lapping onto the jungle. There's not a single stone in all East Pakistan, only silt, and rich silt. And very few roads. We found a young country. A young country hampered and hindered by an old disease. Malaria.
It's one thing to have a disease, but quite another to know the cure and not to be able to use it.
That was Mr. Pavanello of the World Health Organization.
By 1951, when our WHO team pulled out, there were 5 national teams operating here. They covered almost 1,000 square miles and protected over 1 million people. But the district of Mymensingh is the only area which has been almost cleared of malaria. Now, 1952's target was to have 10 teams in the field who would cover 2,000 square miles and 2 million people, if the required quantity of DDT is available in time.
What happened?
Oh, the price of DDT is now 3 times what it was in 1949, so we've had to cut down on our anti-malarial program. That, gentlemen, is frustration.
East Pakistan is held up in its fight against malaria because DDT is in short supply. We began to realize that we were seeing not a full-scale battle, but preliminary skirmishes, unfinished business, pilot projects. Progress reports, some good, some not so good. Our next call was to one of the good ones. We were bound for Northwest India, the Kipling country, the tiger jungle of the Terai.
The story of the Terai is a gigantic tragedy played on a stage of 1.5 million acres with the towering Himalayas as a backdrop. This is the story as I wrote it down. The story of the Terai, Tiger Jungle. Long, long ago, Terai was a civilized land where a race of cultivators prospered on the rich soil. The song of the land was the sound of a happy, busy people. The farmers not only kept the jungle at bay, they began to increase their cultivations by digging irrigation canals. But they were too clever, for they cut these canals across the natural drainage system. And in the rainy season, there were swamps. And in time, the Terai became a drowned land. In the swamps, the enemy hid, the tiny enemy no one knew. The deadliest of the beasts of the jungle. Men became sick and died.
Those who were left became too weak to work. The trees crept in and the tall elephant grass sheltered Shere Khan, the tiger. Now the music of the land changed to the song of the conquering jungle. And each monsoon brought new malarial swamps. For hundreds of years, few, very few, could live for long in the Terai, until only yesterday, the tiger and the elephant put back their ears in fear. Man was coming back with music of a new world. Yes, the song of bulldozers and tree dozers. India had called for international help to attack the Terai jungle so that food could be grown for the hungry millions. We saw tree dozers lean against giant trees and uproot them. Bulldozers linked by massive chains dragged away the trees and the brush. The heavy plows turned over the soil for the first time in 1,000 years. The jungle was in retreat.
What conquered the Terai jungle was weapons like UNICEF's supplies of DDT. UNICEF. DDT. Do you remember those initials that had seemed so strange when I heard them at my first briefing? Well, they had come alive. WHO, UNICEF, UN. They were more than initials now. They spelt people. People learning from each other. People working together. People sharing knowledge. They spelt doctors, nurses, and midwives. And milk for kids. The cry that you heard of the baby in Chiang Mai, that was a cry in the jungle of human misery. It could have been the cry of a baby anywhere in the world, for all over the world there's sickness, undernourishment, and misery. Remember that cry. It's a challenge to us all. A new life to be saved. A new mouth to be fed. A new personality to fulfill itself.
Gene Kelly has just told you the first part of a great new world adventure, Jungle in Retreat.
Now, the story behind this broadcast. It concerns a blueprint, a well-worked-out United Nations plan of action. The UN and its agencies rooting out the weeds of discontent wherever in the world they may grow. This evening you heard part of that blueprint come to life. You watched men of many nations helping each other. You saw countries explaining their needs, mobilizing their manpower and resources to help themselves. That's the international cooperation the United Nations stands for and strives for. And that is the story behind this program. The UN in action, improving standards of life and social progress in larger freedom, contributing to international security and peace.
This program is presented by United Nations Radio and UNESCO. Narration by Gene Kelly. Music by Matthias Scheiber. Script by Francis Dillon, based on documented findings by Richie Calder, Herbert Steinhaus, and Eric Schwab of the UN Reporting Team in Southeast Asia. Jungle in Retreat is produced by Lawrence Gilliam and Gerald Keane of United Nations Radio.